You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Spring training is beginning for all 30 teams, including the Texas Rangers. Let's talk to T.R. Sullivan about what's going on there. I'm Allison Fritter. T.R., two things I want to talk about. First is just Colby Lewis, not because he's pitching for the Rangers, but because he's not. So I feel like we just need to spend a couple of minutes talking about what he meant to the organization. Seemed to be kind of emotional on his way out. Long tenured at Rangers, so that's got to be kind of hard for both sides to make that break.
This is the first time in 8 years he's not been in spring training with the Rangers. Signed with the Rangers in 2010 out of Japan, where he revived his career. Outstanding in the postseason, outstanding in the clubhouse, outstanding, you know, when he's healthy, the guy could pitch. He went through a lot of injuries, incredible injuries. Had hip replacement, flexor tendon, knee surgery. Fought through it all. He was almost a bionic man. And it's shocking that Colby's not here, but Derek Holland's not here. You know, you look at in 2011, the Rangers had their best rotation ever. They're all, you know, started the full season. Matt Harrison, Alexia Gondo, Derek Holland, C.J. Wilson, Colby Lewis. Now they're all gone. I mean, just unceremoniously, they just kind of drifted away. Amazing. Matt Harrison's retired. CJ's retired. Colby, you know, wants to pitch again, but he knows it won't be for the Rangers. And Alexio Gano's pitching in Korea. And Derek Holland with the White Sox. It's just amazing what happened to that great bunch after that one great year. But Colby will definitely be missed.
Yeah, so it just sounds like he's kind of in limbo right now. I guess maybe I'm sure that there was interest, but it sounds like nothing that interested him. Just the kind of deals that maybe, or the kind of offers that he was getting.
I'm not sure if he wants the minor league deal or not. And the guy pitched great last year up into June. We were talking about him possibly going to the All-Star game, and then he came down with an injury, and he was down for 2 or 3 months and didn't pitch well when he returned and didn't pitch well in the playoffs. And I think that, you know, impacted the Rangers' decisions. You know, they went out and got younger, got more power arms than Tyson Ross and Andrew Kashner, but you know, Colby, I look around and see teams. I mean, you tell me this guy can't even come into camp to compete with some of these guys. I'm not saying Colby can still pitch again, but I just can't believe there's not a team out there that at least wouldn't want to take a look at him, especially if they got guys at the World Baseball Classic and they have innings and spring training. Just look at the guy, because you know, he was pitching very well first couple of months of 2016.
Yeah, you have to wonder if he's just going to stay home, stay in shape, keep his arm in shape, and then see what happens when needs come up, when injuries happen throughout spring, and then maybe hook on with somebody. But yeah, like you said, he seems like he still has something to offer, if not just to take a low-risk, high-reward kind of approach to it. Okay, so let's move on. You had a really nice in-depth interview and feature with Jonathan Lucroy, who I think that the people who have covered him and known him through his career know that he's a very smart, very insightful, very kind person. But it's always nice when the fans can actually read something about the kind of person he is, and you really delved into that. So what of all the things, and we'll talk about a lot of the things that you talked about in your story, but what was the first thing that like kind of stood out to you that seems to make him a pretty special guy?
Just how determined he is to give back. I mean, you know, he's big into helping out American military veterans, and you know, he's working with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and he's working with the Miracle League, and he's working with Muscular Dystrophy, and he does a lot of community work. But the one thing that stood out for me is this guy donated a significant amount of money to an orphanage in South Africa. I mean, on the other side of the world. I mean, this guy he loves to give back, no matter, you know, what the venue, what the cause. I mean, you know, the guy's dedicated baseball player. We all know how much homework he does preparing his pitches for a game and, you know, batting practice. But this guy, he's almost kind of like a renaissance man of how much interest he has outside of baseball and what he does and what his family's involved in. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it sounded like he had a little bit of an epiphany a few years ago when, like you talked about, his roommate and best friend from college and the paths that their lives both took, and his buddy had an incident in Afghanistan and had major injuries. And it sounds like that's what really, you know, kind of turned Lucroy, it kind of triggered something in him to maybe do a little bit more.
Yeah, that would, if you read the story and, you know, his best friend goes over to Afghanistan, gets wounded very severely in a firefight and almost lost his life. And Jonathan, you know, saw what it was like, what he was going through, and, you know, he's just been very determined to the cause. I mean, it's that simple.
When you, you know, catchers are very similar in personality. They're kind of natural leaders. They're all very smart. I mean, you can't be a major league catcher and not be extremely bright because there's just so many things you have to do and remember on an everyday basis and throughout the game. You really can't take even a minute off. And so he's when you say like that, he just seems to be a well-rounded guy. But there's with these smart guys, I mean, they need things to occupy their minds away from the game. That seems to be like a running theme that goes beyond like video games. And so it doesn't really surprise me that like he kind of falls into that mold that he really needs to be mentally stimulated when he's away from the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, Dirk Nowitzki is one of the greatest basketball players in NBA history. And one thing that his coach growing up in Germany, one of his coaches encouraged him to do was play the saxophone. He wanted something that Dirk could do to get away from basketball, get away from the game, and it's really, and Dirk says it's really helped him. And I think, you know, all these players, you know, whether it's golfing, fishing, hunting, you know, C.J. Wilson had an exotic interest like photography and car racing and things like that. But I think all these players need something, whether it's just their families or anything, just to get away from the game, get away from the pressure, get away, clear your mind, clear your body, and relax and enjoy life. And I think Jonathan's a perfect example of how it helps him.
Awesome. All right, good stuff. TR, thank you so much. Enjoy spring training. We'll catch up with you next week.
Okay, guys.
The A's are about to be in full swing at spring training, and it's time to catch up with Jane Lee and talk about what is going on with those athletics. I'm Allison Footer. Jane, I wanted to start with talking a little bit about Sonny Gray and the World Baseball Classic. I think it's interesting. He is a, quote, designated pitcher, which means that he will pitch for Team USA if that team advances to the second round. And so I guess my question is, I don't know, there's all kinds of moving parts with this thing, but they really have to be careful with him. And is there any concern at all that this is going to prevent him from really being on a regular throwing schedule throughout spring training? Is that any kind of concern at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the fact that there is no concern about his schedule, about his health, I think it really reflects just the A's attitude right now toward him. I mean, this is a good reflection of how they feel about him right now. I think if there was any hesitation, you know, about his health, about keeping him on schedule, then I don't think that they would let him do this. I mean, they're very cooperative when it comes to WBC participation, and they, you know, they definitely encourage their guys to participate. With Sonny, I think that, you know, if there was just the slightest thing that they were worried about, that they, you know, probably would have stepped in and advised against it. But I think that they're seeing this as a good thing, the fact that maybe he might get into, you know, competition. Not that there's no competition in spring training, but, you know, the atmosphere is different. I think just there's a little more pressure involved, and I think that could be good for him getting that early on ahead of the season. I think Sonny really thrives in those situations, so to get him going maybe a little bit sooner than the regular season could be advantageous for him. And the schedule, I think they had to tweak it maybe just a tad. He threw his first bullpen session in front of, you know, A's coaches and all that today rather than Friday, which was when he was originally scheduled to go. And beyond that, everything kind of stays the same. I mean, you know, now that he's thrown today, everything just kind of lines up to where he would be ready to make his normal start in the WBC when he would have thrown anyway here. So his schedule is not a concern, and even if it has to be tweaked just a little bit along the way, they're not really worried about that because right now, I mean, everything looks good. Everyone's saying he looks good. I mean, watching him today throwing his bullpen session, I mean, he looked like Sonny. Nothing's wrong. There's no health issues. So everything's a go right now. And, of course, you know, things can change. They always do during spring training. But as of right now, I mean, I think he's pretty eager to participate if he gets the chance.
Yeah, it's an interesting, I don't know if conundrum is the right word, but for the World Baseball Classic, because it's March is really such a time where you don't really want your pitchers, like, going all in. I mean, a veteran kind of ace of the staff or a guy like that will say that he usually throws at about 70-80% during spring training, and then he kind of ramps it up trying to work toward opening day. And I think that's more of the concern, I think, from a pitching coach standpoint and a manager standpoint, is these pitchers who go in there with the adrenaline rush, and it's an important game, relatively speaking, and that they might go too hard, but you don't want them to, like, back off in an important game and, you know, embarrass themselves or whatever. So it's like this fine line just for anyone, not just Sonny Gray, but just anyone, to make sure that they're doing things properly during this time of the year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, honestly, with Sonny, no matter the situation, if you tell Sonny to back off, it's probably not going to happen. He's just that guy that, I mean, he's going full bore, you know, every time he's out there, whether it's a bullpen session or a spring training game or, you know, WBC game, regular season, whatever. I mean, there's just kind of, you can't really take that away from him because he's just such a competitor and that's who he is. So I think that's part of it too, and knowing that, okay, this is probably how, you know, he's going to be even if he was in spring training, you know, with that adrenaline and maybe pushing it regardless of where he is.
So moving on to the next topic I'd like to ask you about is the platoon situation. The A's have always been platoon friendly, I guess you could call them. They've never shied away from I mean, I remember a few years ago just talking to Chili Davis, who was a hitting coach at the time, I believe, just about all the platoons that they had. And so maybe they're a little tempered this year. It seems right field and first base are the only two positions where there's a platoon situation. Is that pretty much locked in?
And also catcher.
Catcher, okay.
They would prefer to employ it at catcher with Stephen Bode and Josh Bagley. But, yeah, they have a nice little setup in place, it seems, for first base and right field. Last year it was mostly just, I mean, we saw Yonder Alonso almost every day at first base, but then they got Trevor Plouffe to play third, which meant, you know, moving Ryan Healy over to first base. So Healy and Alonso will platoon at first base, and it seems that Healy will DH on the days he's not at first base. And then in right field, they have another newcomer, Matt Joyce, who will probably platoon with Mark Canha. So a potentially nice little power duo there in right field. And I think, you know, I know that fans were maybe a little disappointed when the A's got Plouffe, knowing that Healy would have to move over to first base. But first base is Healy's natural position, and it hasn't been all that long since he last played it. So I don't think there's really any concern from the A's right now about him playing first base. And, I mean, I think they know that Alonso's not probably not a long-term guy here. So, I mean, eventually that could be Healy's position if they don't move him to DH full-time.
Okay, good stuff, Jane. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Spring training has begun, and for a couple of teams, that means that they get to play in a brand-new facility. That includes the Houston Astros, who are now sharing a place with the Washington Nationals in West Palm. Let's talk to Brian McTaggart about that. I'm Allison Futter. Tags, yeah, let's start with a new facility, actually, since I brought it up. So what, tell me about it. I mean, it looks so shiny and bright, and that logo when you first come in is just gigantic. So just your first impressions of the new place.
Yeah, it's definitely nice. I mean, it's still very much under construction. I mean, you're out there and you hear the popping of catcher mitts and hammers and saws, and construction workers are mingling with you know, in between players and people carrying ladders and hard hats. So there's equipment all over the place. So yeah, I mean, it's still under construction, but the parts we've seen and the parts that are close to being finished are really nice. The Astros should be very proud of it. I mean, we got a tour on Monday, and the weight room is unbelievable. It's huge. It has a cardio deck. The clubhouse is about the size of the Minute Maid Park clubhouse, which before, as you know, in Kissimmee, they had a tiny clubhouse that was had two different sections. There are 10 TVs in this clubhouse. There are TVs everywhere. Technology is everywhere. I mean, there are touch screens. The bullpens and the batting cages are wired for cameras, so the Astros can, you know, take video instead of having to have someone stand there with a tripod. And the fields look great. I mean, there are two main practice fields that the grass just looks terrific. And one of those has the dimensions of Minute Maid Park, which means the short ball in left field where the Crawford boxes is. And there are four minor league fields that all kind of back up to each other, and there's a watchtower in between. So, you know, if there are four things going on, front office can get up there and kind of watch all four. And, again, those are going to be cameras and all that stuff. I mean, it's really nice. They have a long way to go, but it's really nice. Haven't seen the stadium yet. The stadium is still fenced off, still under construction, so we've got a couple weeks till we get in there. But the players all seem really thrilled with what the facility is and what it's going to become when they finally get it finished.
Okay, so that's kind of what was my question was, that there was just all this talk about how it's not done yet and is it going to be ready to go, and, you know, I kind of laughed at that because it's just not that hard to really build a spring training field. I mean, it's not like there's 42,000 seats going in or anything like that. So that, is that mainly where the rest of the construction is that is not completed yet? Is that like on the main field, the stadium?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the stadium, the seats are all in, the field is ready, the outfield, the berm, the fence is all outfield fence, or there are advertisements on the outfield fence. They're scaffolding all around, like the suite areas, the press box areas, a lot of the concession areas. That's the part that is all unfinished. So, you know, parts of it look like it's closed, and then you look at all the scaffolding, and you're like, wow, it's not closed. But as far as you walk in the Astros front lobby, and today they were, as we talked, they were putting in a desk that hadn't been there. And then there's a guy walking with a ladder, and, you know, fire alarms go off for testing, and, you know, the power gets shut off for 10 minutes while they do some tests. And there's just always little things going on, guys with saws cutting marble and tables. And we were in the clubhouse today, and someone had, you know, a worker came in with a giant ladder and was doing something on the ceiling. So it's just weird how the players and the construction workers just kind of mill around and do their own thing, and they don't seem to be getting in each other's way. So that's a good thing.
Okay, well, moving on to actual baseball, a little bit of news today. Evan Gattis had a little anti-inflammatory injection into his right shoulder, which is a throwing shoulder. So I guess that's kind of a wait-and-see approach, maybe not too alarming at this point.
Yeah, Evan didn't seem to be too alarmed by it. He just said the shoulder was sore, and he had the injection. He did hit. He's going to hit again tomorrow. He thinks maybe in 1 or 2 days he'll start throwing again. And, you know, you got to remember, this is a really long spring training. You know, with the World Baseball Classic, this thing's a week longer than before. So, you know, I think I don't think this is serious. I'm sure they're not going to put Evan back there until he feels 100%. But talking to Evan just briefly right after we found out he had this injection, he seemed to blow it off and didn't think it was that serious. And we all know he's a tough guy. So as of right now, I don't think it would be any reason to be alarmed for the Astros.
And you talked to Dallas Keuchel today about, and he had some interesting revelations just about maybe what his health status was a year ago as compared to today. So what did you learn from him?
Yeah, Dallas, you know, was pretty candid. He said basically that he showed up at spring training last year, did not feel good. His shoulder didn't feel good, and that he felt that, you know, the team needed him. He felt he needed to battle through it, and he tried to battle through it all year, pitched with his shoulder discomfort. And what it was ended up being some inflammation in his rotator cuff. Now, he finally told the Astros in August, and we all know he was shut down at the end of August, but he tried to battle through that. And he says if he had to do it all over again, he wouldn't. He would tell them he didn't feel good, but he knew that they were counting on him. He knew that he needed to try to take that ball every fifth day and pitch through it. But, I mean, one of the storylines from last year was, wow, Keuchel's velocity is down. Is he hurt? And, you know, we would ask if he's hurt, and he would say no. But, you know, his velocity was down maybe about a mile per hour on all his pitches, which, you know, is pretty significant, especially for a guy like Dallas who relies on his control and doesn't throw real hard. You know, he needs every tick of velocity he can get. So, you know, it's comforting for the Astros to know that, you know, he's here now and he feels healthy. He's thrown 5 times in the bullpen. He says there's no problems. You know, he really hasn't cut it loose yet, so he's not sure about the velocity. But for those looking for reasons why Dallas Keuchel wasn't Dallas Keuchel last year, I mean, I think there it is. He pretty much hurt all year with that shoulder and just tried to pitch through it. So that'll be interesting to see as we go along if once Keuchel gets in to games and late in spring training, if the velocity's up and he feels like he's back to where he needs to be.
Yeah, it's interesting because he was a little grumpy last year when he would read anything or hear anything about his velocity being down.
Yeah.
And he was, so, you know, it sort of piques your interest because you're like, okay, he's either getting a little bit out of shape about this sort of needlessly because he knows it too and he doesn't know what to do about it, or because he's hurt. So I guess we have that answer now, but I always felt like it was because maybe he had just lost a step and was mad at a reporter for pointing it out. But it seems that he was just maybe being a little extra sensitive because he was hiding an injury.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, he said today, if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do it. And, you know, Dallas is a a great guy to deal with, a fun-loving guy, and you know, dealing with him just a couple of days of spring training, even just the way he's acting seems like the Dallas of old. I mean, he seems relaxed. He seems like he's having a good time. You can just tell he feels good. He was joking with reporters today. He said one of the reporters asked him, like, so was it just rest that helped the shoulder? He's like, no, I went to Antarctica, and, you know, I needed some cold, and I went swimming with polar bears. And one of the reporters was like, really? He's like, no, not really. So he was joking around. He was back to the old Dallas. So hopefully, for Astros' sake, he's back to the old Dallas on the mound as well.
Yeah, I always say that Dallas Keuchel is like the perfect major leaguer because he's like the super nice guy off the field, and then when he gets on the mound, he's not a very nice person, which is exactly what you want in a major league player. So that's good to see that he's back to his old self. So let's end this with one more topic. I'm going to pick the extended netting at Minute Maid Park. The Astros announced that they're going to extend that netting all the way from across the length of the dugouts and lower it for batting practice, which I think is a great idea. And Reed Ryan had an interesting quote, I thought, and it makes perfect sense. It really only makes sense now because of the way that people are kind of attached to their smartphones. So they're not, I mean, you know, 10 years ago it was, you know, you have to pay attention to the game, and now it's like, we can't make you just pay attention, like, because people can't stop looking down at this phone no matter what we're doing. So it's almost like they have an obligation. Now they really can't justify not having that extended netting.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it. I know that the reaction has been mixed on Twitter after I tweeted out the story. Some people were like, yay. Some people are like, this is terrible. But you're right. I mean, you know, the all these ballparks now have this super fast Wi-Fi, and, you know, you can download apps to, you know, Twitter, you know, how engaged fans are on Twitter. And, yeah, people, you know, like it or not, are looking down through phones a lot of times during games. And, you know, people get smoked. We've seen a couple of scary instances at Fenway Park over the last couple of years. And, you know, every year at Minute Maid Park, there's one or two scary instances where someone's hit by a ball or a bat or so forth. But the net is going to be the length of the dugout. It's going to be 12 feet high, so that's pretty significant. They are going to lower it pregame, so fans that want to come down and get autographs and bug the players and all that, they're still going to be able to do that. And I think that's very important. But, I mean, I like it. I mean, I sit in the press box, and, you know, I don't pay the high money to sit behind the dugout, but I tell you what, if I'm ever down there during a game and I'm sitting above the dugout, and like I'm scared. I would not want to sit right above the dugout with no net. I mean, people don't realize how quickly that ball gets on top of you. And I know if I had a seat down there, I'd feel pretty good about it now. And the, you know, the bottom line, I mean, I've watched games through nets my whole life, just like you from the press box. We're always behind a net, and you don't even think about it. And I think that'll be the same for the fans down there. Now they can do it and watch their phones and get on Twitter and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I never want to sit down there. If I go to say hello to somebody, I'm so paranoid. Like, I won't even stay if it's right behind there. I remember last year when this was like kind of becoming a controversy. There were a lot of people that were getting smoked at spring training games. And the excuse that just made me roll my eyes and retch is that they're going to lose business. The teams can't do that because people aren't going to renew their seats behind the dugouts, which is ridiculous, because if those people don't renew their seats, I don't care what market you're in and how bad your team is or how good, you'll sell those seats the next day. I mean, that was to me like an insult to my intelligence that I was actually hearing this as an excuse why they wouldn't put up that netting, because they're worried that there's going to be empty seats behind the dugout, which does not happen. So I guess teams are wising up to that a little bit.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it's not going to take anything away from the game having to look through a mesh net. Like I said, you won't even think about it after a while. And when a line drive comes screaming up and hits that net, I think they'll be pretty happy it's there.
Yeah, the most expensive seats, by the way, in any ballpark are right behind the plate, and those are behind the net. So, you know, I'm a little, like, leery of these dramatic reactions to this. So, anyway, not that I'm holding back anything. Tag, I've taken up enough of your time, so thank you very much, and I will see you in Florida soon.
Okay, see you there.
Spring training is upon us officially. Pitchers and catchers are at their respective spring training sites. It's time to talk about the Angels with Richard Justice for our weekly chat. Richard, where should we start? I guess let's start with what the pitching staff looks like. So there are several jobs that are filled, but there are several jobs that are still open. So tell me what you – that's going to be the big question, right? I mean, everyone's going to be looking to see if these guys can stay healthy. So where are they right now?
Six jobs are locks. That's it. so six are open. And the one thing Billy Epler did is he brought in, I think you see that with more and more teams now, bringing in a ton of non-roster guys, guys that have had major league experience. I think he's got 10 guys in camp not on the roster have major league experience. And the point is, in the, we saw the Dodgers do this and get production out of it. You're going to need probably how many? 12 starters. And so you find one or two guys of this group, you could make the difference between making the playoffs and missing the playoffs. But for the Angels, everything begins with two guys. If Garrett Richards is healthy, not only would it maybe put them in the postseason, but he declined Tommy John surgery, underwent stem cell research, threw five innings in the instructional league, so far has passed every test. Think about this. If he's okay without having the surgery, it could change the way we look at elbow injuries. And, you know, there's already people looking at that. And the other one is Matt Shoemaker, who had one of the most horrific injuries you or I have ever seen, fractured skull. I mean, there was a period of hours where they were thinking, we're not sure he's going to live. And he's quite upfront about the fact that when I get back on the mound, I don't know what the impact is going to be. But it begins with those two guys, and then it's, you know, it's what is Jesse Chavez, bullpen, starter, all of that stuff. But they have three guys competing for the closer spot. But it's interesting, and I think the Angels go to camp with a lot of optimism. They're going to have at least six new players from a year ago. You know, and we see this in Seattle. What Billy Epler's done in Anaheim is you go and you make under-the-radar trades. Ed Wade used to tell us, you know, Paul Owens told me you get better today. It's not a big, oh, you slap your forehead, the great. But they are a different team, and they could have up to 10 new players.
And one of those new players could be, Bud Norris. I mean, I kind of like some of the guys that are going to be competing, some of these kind of fringe guys that you don't really hear about a lot or know about a lot. They do have interesting pasts. They've had success. You need those kind of non-roster invites or whatever you want to call them to kind of make the competition what it is during spring training. But these names that I'm looking at here, I mean, these aren't just like, you know, throwaway guys. I mean, they could really be contributors.
You're right. You know, so they have three spots for the rotation are locked up. Richards, Matt Shoemaker, and Ricky Nolasco. And then Tyler Skaggs has been a top-of-the-rotation prospect at points in his career, probably still is if he's healthy or when he's healthy. Jesse Chavez, who's a guy that's just – I mean, I'm just a huge fan. And then Alex Meyer, Bud Norris, both have been top prospects at different times in their career. Yosmiro Petit, who was a big contributor to the Giants at different times. Manny Buñuelos, who's a guy the Yankees once looked at as, hey, the future of our rotation. Bring them all in, you let them compete, and see what you got.
Okay, so we need to talk about Albert Pujols, of course, because this is an Angels podcast, and we'd have to talk about Albert Pujols. So he is running on an anti-gravity treadmill, so I don't know what that is, except that kind of sounds like something that, like, when you get on the treadmill and you're like, oh my god, I feel much older and larger than I actually am. What is it?
The Rockets always had one for Yao Ming. He's running on an anti-gravity treadmill. And you go, what does that mean? Well, that means he will not be playing basketball for quite a while. I think with Albert, you know, if they got Albert back on May 1, let's say even June 1, and he's Albert the rest of the way, 1,000 OPS, 900 OPS, something, they'll be happy with that. That's why you go out and sign Luis Valbuena. Because, in fact, when Albert comes back, how many at-bats does Valbuena get? How many at-bats does C.J. Cron get? So that sort of thing. But, you know, he's still Albert Pujols. He still impacts everybody in the lineup around him. And when you have Albert and Mike Trout in there, that's pretty formidable. So far, so good, everything. But, you know, he's at that age where he's not, as Mark Teixeira said last year, he goes, I'm at that age where I'm not going to feel great every day.
And there's closer competition, which I think is really interesting, given that Houston Street is in that mix. And there's two other guys. So it's really, I mean, we actually saw this kind of with the Astros. It's really hard to discern who your closer is going to be during spring training. It's hard to really make important decisions like that when you're talking about spring training games. Does Street have the edge because he's kind of incumbent, or how is that going to work?
Houston Street, I guess, starts day one as the closer if he's healthy, and that's probably what it comes down to. He's not fireballer anymore. The way I look at it is Houston Street is the closer of today. Cam Bedrosian is clearly the closer of tomorrow, and how quickly tomorrow comes. I think what you have in those guys, and you also throw Andrew Bailey into that, who in the past has pitched late in games, is you have a very strong manager, a very organized manager, and you let him figure it out. And we also know that Houston Street's not a guy that's going to pout if he's pitching the seventh or eighth inning. Does he want to pitch the ninth? Of course he does. But the goal is you just try to make winning important.
So you've known Mike Scioscia for a very long time, probably a lot longer than many of us have, and possibly many who are listening to this have. You like him a lot, and you like how he runs spring training. Tell us about just what the mornings are like and when he first has his meetings and how that all goes.
One of the sounds that tells you it's spring training is when you hear that laughter coming out of the Angels clubhouse. I've never been invited to be in there. Doubt I'm going to be, but it's a mixture of sense of humor, which is also another way of team building. We saw it a big part of what Scott Service did in Seattle. But it's also setting a tone for the day, a lighthearted tone, because you know you're not going to be out there that long, but they expect you to work hard and work efficiently. And I think it's just the way you sort of get to know the manager gets to know you, and you create a bond. You know, we saw it a couple of years ago when there was some internal strife with the general manager, the manager and all. The players stuck up for their manager, and that's what Mike Scioscia builds. You know, look, the guy's, 40 years in baseball, played for Lasorda, who was one of the greatest ever at creating a group that to function as one. And that's what Mike does. That's one of the best things about spring training is hearing that laughter coming out of the Angels clubhouse and go, the boys are back. And when he started doing that in 2002, that season ended with a championship. And it was little things like, I'm going to fine you a dollar if you don't take the extra base. I'm going to fine you $5 if you throw to the wrong cutoff man. Lighthearted, but a message.
Thank you very much, Richard.
The Mariners pitchers and catchers have reported to spring training, which is good news for really Mariners fans. But the other good news is that Greg Johns has also reported to spring training. Let's talk about all things going on with Seattle. I am Allison Footer. Okay, Greg, so we've really just been talking nonstop this offseason about everything that the Mariners are trying to do and wanting to do, and it seems like all they do is really make roster moves. So now things are a little bit quiet, and I wanted to just ask you about one thing I don't think we've touched on that much, and that's that they really wanted to address the speed issue on their team, which meant that they wanted to get better with that. And they really seem to have done that with acquiring Segura and Dyson. So with everything, obviously, that this front office has done, that's a pretty key thing to be able to infuse into your lineup.
Yeah, it's key, Allison, in two areas. One, obviously, on the base paths, and that was an area I remember sitting here in spring last year. I remember it well. It was with Scott Service, you know, his first year as a manager, and you kind of try to get a feel for him. And I remember they played a game early in Cactus League, and they stole like 5 or 6 bases, and they talk to him afterwards, and he goes, "This is what I want to be. I want to have a team that makes the other team uncomfortable." You know, he's a former catcher. You know, he sees the game from that perspective. And he knows what that kind of pressure does to a pitcher and a catcher and an opposing team. And he says, "That's what we want to be." And we kind of kept waiting for that this season. Well, you know, as it turned out, a lot of the guys that stole the bases in the spring were guys that didn't play big roles, and the guys that they were expecting, you know, Aoki, they thought would be a real speed threat, and he turned out to not have a very good year on the bases. And Ketel Marte didn't get on base a whole lot, and they just turned out to be not one of the slower teams in baseball. It really wasn't what they wanted. So one of the big keys of this offseason was to go change that, and Gene Segura, guy that they're going to have up top of that lineup, hitting first or second every game, is a guy who both got on base more hits than anybody in the National League last year for the Diamondbacks, but also, you know, he's averaged 33 stolen bases a year for the last 4 or 5 years. So he's a guy that runs well and gets on base. And Jerod Dyson, obviously, they brought in to play left field from the Royals, is one of the fastest players in baseball and a huge speed threat. So Dyson will be leading off most games when he's playing and Segura hits second, or if Dyson's not in the lineup, but Segura will probably be the leadoff guy. So get that speed threat atop the lineup and really see what that can do, you know, when you got that 3-4-5 coming in with Cano, Cruz, and Seager. You know, that could be a pretty interesting offense, and that's where they want to go. And then Leonis Martin probably hit ninth, and so they kind of look at him as another guy who can steal bases. So he gets on, you go nine, come back up to the top of the order, and you got three guys in a row that really can run. So that's a big emphasis. And the other part of that speed is the outfield defense, where they really weren't what they wanted to be last year athletically. A big focus of this team, a picture that they wanted to see as well, was a team that could really fit Safeco Field. and a lot of that comes with just that big outfield and covering a lot of ground. And they got Leonis Martin last year to play center, but really didn't have guys that could run in the corners. And that really changes when you can put Gerard Dyson out in left field. And it looks like Mitch Haniger going to be playing a lot of right field. And those are three guys, they're really three center fielders that came up playing center field and really can cover some ground. So they're pretty excited about that. And they got some other guys on the bench that can do the same. So that's really one of the key differences of this team, Allison, and really something I'm looking forward to seeing. I know Scott Service for one as well. Really want to see that team that he really envisioned to maybe come to life a little more this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the depth chart here on the Mariners website, and I was kind of making some notes and seeing some position battles. And gosh, I mean, things are really pretty much set. And I like this infield. I guess the only maybe question mark a little bit is Danny Valencia, just because he's with the new team and he's not quite as loaded with talent as some of these other guys. But overall, this infield looks pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, first base is the question. Dan Vogelbach coming up last year, they really like him as a prospect. Hasn't done it at the big league level, so you want to see that. I just saw him today. Looks like he's lost a little weight, and looks like, you know, they've been wanting to see how he handles himself defensively at first base. So that'll be a key. Valencia's a guy they feel he's really a third baseman more coming up, but they have a pretty good third baseman here in Kyle Seager. And Valencia will be playing first base, kind of platooning with Vogelbach. Or if Vogelbach struggles at all, I think Valencia might see more time. You know, he's a pretty established hitter that they feel like they can go to pretty well there if they need. So that's kind of, we'll see how that one plays out. But you go around the horn, of course, Cano is going to handle second base and one of the best in the game. You got Segura now at short. They really feel they've upgraded that position. And Kyle Seager, kind of the iron man at third. I think he's played darn near every game for the last 5 years. And the guy, they just, when they want to give him a rest, he never seems to come out of the lineup. So he's been a guy they've penciled in there and puts up numbers consistently as anybody at that spot. So, yeah, they really feel solid with that defense that infield. And interestingly, I think, and we talked about the outfield defense, it's that infield potential offense they have there and the pop they have at some different positions that allows them to be a little more athletic in the outfield and maybe not need a big power guys in the corners as much as some teams. Because you can get Cano at second, as you know, 39 homers last year. That you don't usually get that out of a second baseman. And Segura's a guy with a little pop too at short. And Seager, again, there's Mr. Consistency over there at third. So they really feel pretty good about, you know, still being a pretty good power team. They were second in the American League in homers last year. And, you know, they don't think they drop off a lot with going a little more speed in the outfield this year, guys that can run and cover that outfield. So they like the mix they've got, and that's kind of what we're looking for going into spring and see how it all plays out.
So my last question, you had a poll on Twitter. I voted. right before Mariners camp started, you asked fans if they're feeling like this year's team will, A, win the AL West, B, win a wild card berth, C, come close but no cigar, and D, not be a playoff contender. I voted that they will win a wild card berth, and it appears, and you got a nice little showing there, 1,317 votes, and 50% of fans believe they'll win a wild card berth. That sounds like really reasonable. 29% think they'll win the AL West. I think it's a very winnable division. I don't see why they couldn't, but wild card berth does maybe logically, just looking at the team right now, make a little bit more sense, which gives a lot of reasons to be optimistic.
It's I'm always curious how fans feel, and I guess, you know, coming into spring, you're supposed to be optimistic. You never know with a team whose fan base has been, you know, disappointed 15 years in a row that they haven't been in the postseason. But it tells you something when you do kind of take a pulse of the fans. I think it was, you know, over 75% that feel they're going to be in the playoffs. It's a pretty good optimistic fan base going in, and I think speaks well of what DePoto's done this offseason, kind of regenerating things again with a lot of changes and positive moves around a team that came very, very close last year. And I think there's a pretty good feeling in Seattle that this team's ready to take that next step. Service is talking to us today. His kind of motto for this spring is whatever it takes. And they feel like they're right there. They just got to do whatever it takes to get over that hump and be that playoff team. And when they do it, whether it's this year or next or whenever they get there, I know Seattle's going to light up, because I was here in the mid-1990s and 2001 when they won 116 games and the Safeco Field was packed every night, and the feeling in Seattle of being a baseball team, baseball town with a big team that kind of been waiting for that for a long time. And now it's been a while again. And, you know, Gerard Dyson, again, a guy that talked about seeing in Kansas City how much that city lit up when the Royals ended their long drought. It was 28 years when they finally got in the playoffs and then, of course, won the World Series the next year. He talked about how fun it is to be a part of and how much he'd like to be a part of that in Seattle. And I think it is fun when you get that kind of thing. And maybe this is the year, Allison. Maybe this is the year they do whatever it takes and get in there and play some meaningful games in October. It would be fun to see Safeco Field full and doing that in October and seeing how far they can go.
Oh, man. I'd just love to cover the playoffs there. It's one of the best ballparks, one of the better cities in this country, and that would be really fun.
Yes,
like you said, I mean, the drought has been so long, but the fan base, I know attendance has been up and down over the years, but the fan base has always been like a very, very loyal fan base, regardless of how the team is doing. And I guess do you hear from a lot of fans? I mean, do you find that the following seems to be pretty hefty in terms of just day-to-day following the Mariners?
Yeah, I mean, it is good. You know, I mean, I've covered enough sports over the years that when you win, everything changes, and you get that the rest of the fans that have just kind of half paying attention most of the time, and suddenly everybody, every grandmother's tuning in every game, and that's the fun. That's when it's fun to be part of a team, and we've seen it in different places, different times, different cities, but Seattle is definitely a place. I can remember just the buzz of coming to the park, and you see it. You know, you see it at times now. You see it, when Felix has pitched, and they fill it up with Kings Court, and after he threw his perfect game, the next game the place was just packed, and those kind of games that remind you what baseball is when it's packed and full and that buzz. And Service talks about it, and players that come in have talked about it over the years. You know, how fun Safeco Field can be, and any park is when it's full. But it is. I think we get spoiled in Seattle, kind of forget. You know, I travel and see all the ballparks, and Safeco is as good as it can be, and it's a beautiful place on a warm night in August, September, and it sure would be fun. I'm looking forward to baseball here in Arizona as we get going, but this is just the practice games, and the point of all this is to be playing in 6 months and playing fun games, and we'll see where it goes this year.
Absolutely. Okay, great stuff, Greg. Thank you so much. Talk to you next time.
Okay, awesome. Take care.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.